Hello, everyone. I'm Helen Louise, and I am a grateful alcoholic. I'm grateful to be here tonight because when I was drinking, they told me all of you would be here. I'd get me a drink. And I had this motto that it went like this: I don't know you, and I'm not standing in line to meet you. That's called attitude. That's what got me here. The attitude that I had going for me when I was out there drinking was something else. We only have 35 minutes for me to talk, and so I better hurry up and get to the program. Because that drunk log, I could still be standing up here talking, and no one can tell it like me because I experienced it. For the simple reason, because see, I came from this town down south, you know, and I'm sure you hear that. And what we drank was white lightning. We call it corn liquor. And it had to be 185 proof or more because a lot of people had a steal. Had those steal where you make it. Then I came from near this army town, and we drank 3-2 beer. Now, my grandmother raised me. My mother was quite young, so was my father. So she dropped me off to two or three sisters, and I ended up with my daddy's mother and sister. And she didn't like soldiers. She said they lie too much. So if they lie too much, I was really trying to get me one. I went out every night to get one. Every day I wanted one of them. I liked the way they lied to me, you know? So around, my grandmother took in washing and ironing, and I hated it with a passion. I still can't iron too good. I'm glad they got nice washing machines, you know, now in polyester. And I still don't work at that stuff too much, that ironing. And so she said, I went out this in October, around Halloween. And I didn't get back until Sunday. Now, my grandfather had a belt that he had carved holes in it. It had little daisies and ace of spades and clubs and in this wide belt. And when it hit you, it would make a little rosette, you know. And so when I come strolling down the street that Sunday afternoon after spending the whole weekend out, because I had been coming in late at night and early in the morning, and I knew she didn't like that because we had one key and I didn't know where the key to the house was. And so she never locked up the house. So this afternoon I come strolling down, and the neighbors, you know, they talk too much. They told her, here she come. And when she got near me, she took that strap and she hit me. Whap, you got a husband. Then she whopped him and told him, you have a wife. Now, that's the end of my courtship, and that's my marriage. So they took us over in Alabama for those little quickie things. Anybody been there before? They know about Phoenix City and all that. So they took us over there and got one of those quickie marriages. And so when I went to school the next morning, I told all my friends that I'm married. And they said, oh, gone good, you're not married. I said, yes, I am, too. They said, well, what's your name, then? I said, just hold it right there. And I got my marriage. I took my marriage certificate out of my book and opened it up because I had to find out what my own name was. And then I told her what my name was. And so he and I, we moved somewhere in the house and we did a lot of drinking. This man didn't like to drink. He didn't go to church. And I loved to dance. I loved to dance all night long. I just loved to party. And he didn't like none of those things. He didn't say don't do them, because to make sure he didn't say that to me, when I would leave going to church or Sunday school in the morning, I called him back and said, I know you don't want to go with me going to the picture show. And I wouldn't come back till late at night. And so he kind of knew my pattern for not doing anything right. And I kind of got off the floor a lot of times. Sometimes, you know, when you go to Fish City, you on the floor sometimes. Sometimes you're behind the bed. Sometimes you're out the door, you know. And so a lot of little goody things happened. He didn't mind. He didn't mind doing it either, and I had to get up and shake, you know, try to get myself together. Sometimes I saw stars and sometimes I didn't. But in the meantime, he got transferred to one little town up here in Tennessee, now in Macon. Then we went to Tennessee. Then we went to Texas. And he said, "You know what, babe?" I said, "What?" He said, "Texas is so hot, the trees looking for shade." So if the trees were looking for shade, I was looking for cold beer and a drink. So I used to take that, he'd go to make reveille, and I used to take that train to go up to Waco and Dallas to get me a pint of liquor, a fifth of liquor, because this little town was dry. And I don't want to be without it. You know, you don't want to be without your grocery, so you know you don't want to be without a good drink in a little town that, you know, ain't nobody up but you when you up, you know. And so I looked on the map and I discovered, you know, geography, that Texas was next to California. And I said, "Oh, yes, my daddy's in California." So I called my daddy and I said, "Daddy," he said, "Yes." I said, "I live in Texas now." Now, I didn't get out there to Texas until Valentine's Day, and you can rest assured I hadn't been there a week when I decided to call my daddy. And I said, "Can I come out to California?" He said, "Yes." So he sent me a ticket on the All-American bus, that was the name of it. Took me a whole week or 8 days to get here. But I got here. Coming from my little small town, you know, and drinking that, because see, we didn't drink out of stemware. We drank out of Mason fruit jars. That's just a decent drink. And those Kraft cheese glasses, about that tall. You put three fingers around it and hold it. You know, you don't have to go back too many times and ask for more, you know. And so when I got here, I told him, coming out here, and my husband said, "Baby, you put me on the bus, baby. Be back in 2 weeks." I said, "Okay, you know how you say yes." Mm-hmm. So it took me 3 months to get back. And when I stayed out here 3 months, and you know, Los Angeles back in the 40s was pretty to me, because I had never seen so many bright lights and colored lights and nightclubs. And we didn't have nightclubs in my home. We had honky-tonks and houses that had clubs in them, you know. And so that was then. It's different now. And so I started going out on Central Avenue, and it was blooming. It was, I just had a good time. The Mimo and the Dunbar Club. Nobody in here old enough to remember that but me. Ain't that good? So I was down there having a good time, and I stayed 3 months. And so my husband, I went back to Texas, and when he informed me, "Darling," I said, "Yes." He said, "We're going to be stationed in California." Immediately, I want to know where about and how come. "How come you're going to California? I just left. What you mean?" Because, see, I didn't want him to catch me, you know, wanking and blanking and be with all these people out here, you see, that I hadn't met. And all the Army bases, you know, they was on alert and everything. They were really all set up and everything out this way. Santa Monica was beautiful. They had the mines and the water. Well, see, I had got out here and went down to Pendleton. I had got with the Marines, the sailors, the soldiers. And I didn't know who was going to know me when he got with me, see. So we were here for a while, and we got transferred to Arizona. And I got introduced there to tequila. That tequila had me singing my prayers, you know. A lot of things happened up there. Then he went to Europe. And when he went to Europe, I went home. You know how you meet people and you become long-lost friends? I call them safety pin friends. They get so close to you and you safety pin yourself to them. So this girl lived in Chicago and asked me to come to Chicago so that I could take up beauty culture. And I went up there and I learned to learn beauty culture, learned to become a beautician. I came back home and I took the state board and I passed. But I was up there long enough for the war to end. And when the war ended in Europe, my husband had gone over there. He came back and Mr. Roosevelt said he can get a GI Bill. Now, I don't know anything about the GI Bill and the points and nothing like that. But I do know if it's money involved, I know something about that. So anyway, he says, we can buy a house. And we bought a house. I told him, I said, "Darling, why don't you buy a house so we can get into it?" and I'll take care of it, and I'll do this and all of that. And my friends told me, said, well, you know, my husband's going overseas. I said, for what? They're going to rebuild Japan. So I, you know, held a little conference with my husband so he could help pay the bills, you know, and pay for the house. And I wanted a car. Now, I don't even drive, and I wanted a car. See, you know, all the things you buy with money, that's how I laid out to him. If he go overseas, we can have. And so, so in the meantime, while he was overseas, and I failed to tell you in the early part of my pitch that there were sporting houses, and there were green light and red light areas, and all these ladies that working at was at this sporting house used to wear those beautiful sheer blouses and that pretty lipstick, and their fingernails were red, and they smelled so good. And I was a little girl, and I said, oh, I want me some of that. I didn't know what you had to go through to get it. All I knew, I'm one that see good and want some of it, and we'll try to get some of it. I'm not one to look at it and hope it come my way. I work at trying to have it, see. And I did. So I proceeded to get this house, that he had this house and everything. So he went overseas, and I named this house Hubba Hubba. I had everything jumping there. I built a beauty shop, and I had all a little television about like this. You couldn't hardly see it. You closed your eyes, you didn't. And then I had a record player, and I had all these goodies in this little 14 by 14 room. And so when the time would come, when party time come on weekend, I'd call up one or two fellas that knew some more fellas. And I think I must have had a whole regiment down there, you know, on weekends. And I had all these Christmas tree lights all out in the back to remind me of California. And I had all these army blankets so you could stretch out and enjoy yourself. You know, some of the fellas sent for their wives, some of them sent for the girlfriends, you know. And I just had a good time, and I became this madam-like, you know. But you see, when all these things happen to you, you don't think, you know, you're drinking with, you know, everybody come in. You forget to slow down that you head up everything. I got so, when I would get too high or felt like I was going to feel my Cheerios, I tell them I'm tired. I never did pass out. I'm just tired. I'm going here to rest. And I would go in that room to rest. And I wouldn't come out. When I come back out, you know how you come out, it's dark and nobody's there but you. I would come out looking, where's everybody? Well, I done slept through all the fun, you know. Rather, I passed out through all the fun, but I never said I passed out. I just said I was resting. So this happened to be in the 50s, and my husband passed, and he got wounded and died from his wound. So I would, for 10 years, I would go to that cemetery for 10 long years and said, what you haul off and die and leave me with all these bills for? And so, he didn't even make the bills, I made them. And so, people got so they didn't want to go out with me. Because you see, I was the crying widow. You see, things happened to me in 10 years episodes. See, when I married at 17, and then he went overseas, and he died when I was 27, and then 10 more years, I had made to Alcoholics Anonymous at the ripe age of 37. And but I didn't know I had no problem. I thought maybe you drank it with you. You put some cigarette ashes in it. You see, I was on blame. I blamed everybody for the reason I had hangovers. My hangovers came like bright yellow when I'd heave, yellow, bright yellow, orange, and yellow again, and I would howl like a dog. My neighbor go back to my backbone, and I'd go, ah-hoo! I don't ever want that. I don't ever want to feel like that no more. Those are the things that happened to me. When I moved out here, I was mad with everybody in my hometown. I didn't even care if Georgia dropped off the map. That's what I felt like. So what I actually did, I called my dad and told him, could I come out here? Now, I knew my father said he belonged to a group of people, wonderful people, the most marvelous people. They are so friendly and they are so nice. I never asked him who they were and where they were or nothing. I said, that's good. That is really good. And you know I don't drink anymore. I said, well, that's good. When you get old, you're supposed to stop drinking. You're not supposed to be... You know, you leave this stuff here so for young people like me, you know. That's what I was telling him. And he was very kind, very loving, he and his wife. And the 10-year span ran out, and I called, and I had got this civil service job. And this civil service job was at the base, and they told me to go over there. I didn't have any more money, so I had to go to work. And I didn't want to go to work. The Army wife suggested that I go to work. And they hired me at this hospital. She said, can you take a blood pressure? I said, the doctor take that. She said, can you read a thermometer? I said, I keep trying to tell you, the doctor and the nurse do all those things. I don't know that. You know, it was on a hangover. I was arrogant, needing a job. You know, it's nothing in the world. It's needing money and don't have sense enough to stand up there to work for it, to go after it. You know, just get all arrogant and everything. So what I did, she finally taught me how to take those things, and I became an instant nurse in 10 minutes. So when I went back downtown, I told them all, you can come get your hair fixed if you want. If you don't have to. You see, I had lost all of my clientele by, you know, we use hot irons, by dropping those hot irons down the back. And when I raked that comb across that neck, all them teeth would be on that neck, or them curling eyes would be there. And I thought, oh, y'all bring honey. I didn't go to do that. It was a whole lot that happened during my drinking. But then, as I said, when we got here, when I called my dad and asked him, could I come out here? And I had walked off from that job. And when I walked off from it, I drove out here. Now, I can't even take care of myself, and I go and adopt a baby. Now, this, I don't know what made me do that, but I did. And I told that baby, she's 2 weeks old, I said, now don't you love nobody but me, because I'm the one that's feeding you, taking good care of you. And I just talked to that baby like she was going to answer me back, you know. But she's just looking at me, and I'm just telling her who I am as if she cared, you know. I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that, and I'm just full of armor, you know. And so I packed that car, and I drove cross country, because see, I didn't make Skid Row. I had Skid Row right at my own home. See, the roaches had moved in. The rats had moved in. They was wiggling their nose at me while I was laying on the floor. And I got so I could not go to the bathroom. I could not go nowhere in that house without crawling. And then when I crawled to the bathroom, then I lean over, wash my face in the commode and said, it's clean, I flushed it just a while ago, talking to myself. And I went through the episode of all of that kind of carrying on in my drinking, which was, it's not anything that I like, anything that I brag over. It is what happened to me when I was out there. And the book states that to talk about, to share what happened, what it was like, what happened, and how it is today. I am so truly grateful that I don't have to go through that anymore. And in 1960, when I moved here, lock, stock, and barrel, I had that car packed with everything. And when I drove at midnight, 1 minute after 12, I said, you can go over that ocean if you want, because I ain't never coming back here. That was what I made up in my mind, but I've been back several times. But, and I came out here. And Daddy, in the house with my father, he was his wife, they were wonderful people. When I got here, they had 13 years or 14 years on this program. And they knew how to handle me. Because if she had handled me any other way other than being friendly and kind, I wouldn't be standing here tonight. Because she was my stepmother, and I stayed on ready to be sure to put her in her place. See? And when you're starting to stay on ready to get people told and put them in their place, it's not a good feeling. But she knew how to communicate with me. She knew how to not to jump into that, whatever I had going for me. If I cleaned up the house, I wanted her to pat my back all night, tell me what a good deal I done, you know. But she would say, oh, that's nice. And she'd look over my dad and say, we going to the meeting tonight? And, you know, it looked like she didn't appreciate me cleaning up her house, you know. But that's just the way she was. They never talked to me and said, baby, don't you think you drank too much? No, because if he had said that to me, I would have just said everything I would have come up to him. Because I had been known to have a sharp tongue. They say the tongue is sharper than the sword, and mine was. And I didn't even have to use profanity. I just have to be observant to what I say and what I do. Because there are times that sometimes some say something no mean any harm. But if I answer here, it's like coming to the steps. Sometimes I mention something, you know. And so, anyway, my sponsor, Helen, her name was Helen, Helen and Charlie, they went to their meetings. They never said anything to me about attending meetings. And so Labor Day, we went out, and I had this hangover. And I had told her, after it was over, I said, you know what, take me wherever that is you go to make you so happy. I said, because I'm so tired. I'm so tired. I would go on the floor. I had got a job by then at County General, and I would lay on the floor, and my daughter would just roll all over me, and I'd just be so weak. She'd look at me, she said, poor thing, she's so tired. I was tired. I was tired of whatever I was doing, just plain tired. But I wasn't drinking when I went to County General. That was after I came to the program. So she took me one Monday night to a closed women's meeting upstairs on Wilshire. And there was a woman up there talking about some things she had done. And she identified, I identified with the things she was saying. Because when everybody else was laughing, she said something else, and I laughed. Nobody was laughing but me. And I looked around, it was so still, nobody was saying anything. And I didn't say anything, but I felt so good and so relieved up there that whatever it is that she said, it seemed like I began to feel it's all right to be me. It's all right to have those feelings. It's all right that I don't like this, I don't want this. Whatever it was, I felt real calm, and I couldn't tell you about it. When we left the meeting, I told my Nana, I said, I really like that. I have not felt that good since I joined church. She said, oh yes, and just laughed, and just laughed, because when she laughed and talked, all back in here, you could see her palate, her tongue back in there, and her mouth, the teeth were clean, the gold in the fillings was looking good, and I'd be standing there just looking in her mouth and my daddy's mouth, and I'd be really trying to stand close to anybody that happy. I know you had a drink when we were drinking coffee, and I'd be leaning close trying to smell it, you know, to see, looking all down up her throat, you know. And so anyway, she was just like that, and she got me a lot of babysitters. She looked after this little girl. She would tell me that, baby, you, why don't you ask so-and-so, will she keep the baby for you? And so I asked this girl, not knowing that she had already paved the way for me to ask her. And she would keep this girl, my daughter, while I was at work. And but they did so many things. My first job, she asked me, well, so-and-so's working somewhere. Said, would you think you'd be able to go out and do some day work? And over in Beverwill, somewhere over here. And I was only getting $10 a day. And I'd give the lady $5, 50 cents an hour for keeping my daughter. And then I had enough to buy some gas. And then she didn't ask me for any food. But I'm just saying that some of these things are coming along with in my, when I decided to do something about my drinking. She was there for me, my father and my stepmother. They were there for me to assist me and let me know that this is the easy way if I allow them to help me and to assist me and to make many meetings. And so I did. I went up there, and that was September the 12th, 1960. I have not had a drink. I have not wanted a drink. Now, I've had a whole lot to happen. I've been there for, and say bad, good, indifferent. I've been there for it, but I have not had to take a drink. I have not thought drink, because I hope I never have a hangover like I had before I came here. In 1960, there were approximately 17 women, and I think most of them gone, but by four of us now that has time. The group, one is in Las Vegas, and one is here, and myself. They have the same time. And but it's fantastic. This is my 39th year in sobriety, and in September, it's when I'll experience that time. I lost my sponsor, and I lost my dad. Then I had a lot of other death in my family. Then I had a lot of friends on the program in the past, but I didn't drink. Now, out of doing that, I had told you that I had worked as a nurse's aide in my home. When I came here, I went to work at county, and I left county, and I went to school up in the valley. And I would drive up to Valley College, to take my nursing. And when I'd get home, my dad would say, Louis, he said, that's doing it. And I wonder what he was talking about. And I asked my Nana, because I would talk through her to him, and she said, He means you doing what you want to do. And are you getting enough meetings? That's what he means. And so I learned how to go to the Nest. I learned how to go to Reseda. I learned how to go to Radford Street. And I pick up meetings all the way home, because when I left, it's 5:30 or 6. I made sure I got back to some meetings before I got home at 8 o'clock. And then they asked me, this girl was giving up the secretaryship at my home group. And I raised my finger under the table, and who saw it? My sponsor saw it. And so she said, oh, marvelous, marvelous. Isn't that wonderful? Because you see, I was the person that if I went to a meeting, and I still kind of sit in the back sometimes, but I would sit in the back of where that when you say the Lord's Prayer, I can go out the door. And I didn't empty any ashtrays because I didn't smoke. And I didn't fold up any chairs because I only sat in one. And I pull that to the side. And all the things that keep you from experiencing your fringe benefit, and I'm not talking about money either. I'm talking about that feeling where you don't have to want to jump out the chairs, or you're running, anxiety, all those rage feelings, and sitting on your hand. I did all those things. But you see, by me getting involved, and I became the secretary of the Baldwin Hills group, and I stayed there 7 years. Now, a lot of people said that was too long, but every time I'd ask my sponsor, can I leave now? She said, what's wrong? I said, nothing. She said, well, why leave? You know, I didn't know I was supposed to exchange with somebody else. It was just that she was keeping show me there where I could learn how to live in Alcoholics Anonymous. And she would take that big book down with Webster's Dictionary. You know, when you know it all and you know how to read and write, you don't want nobody else to tell you how to read. So she would take it out, and she was a beautiful reader. And she would read to me, and she would explain to me all about the promises. And she would tell me all about the steps. And if you do this, this is what happened when you do that. And you don't have to worry about learning this book for memory. You don't have to learn that. You utilize it. Don't you analyze it. And this is the way she would talk to me. I had to be hound with white kid girls because my daddy said, when going to the ball game, he said, before they throw the ball out, in my head, the game's already over. That's how fast I think. And so he had to tell me a lot of times, slow down, slow down. We haven't got there yet. Don't close the gap before you get in there and see what's happening, you know. Because I could say, well, I know they're talking about me. I know this and I know that. She said, what make you feel so important? You think people going to take all their time when they wake up to talk about you? They got to talk about themselves some. Said, now, don't you feel like that? Now, nobody's picking on you. And I had this job out there, and I would go to work, and I said, they don't like me. And Daddy would come by. Well, they like you by as well as you like them, you know. And I said, well, what about me working? Oh, work ain't never killed nobody. I said, well, look at my skin, how it's jumping. See, nobody died from jumping skin, you know. That's what Daddy would do. She would say it, and then he would laugh. And I learned how to laugh. I learned how not to be so stern and grunt. Because, see, I had long lost stopped laughing. You say something regardless how funny it was, I grunted. I said, you know. I went through all the things most young people on the program go to now. All the questions, I asked a lot of questions, and I did what I wanted to do. I tried to bring the outside program inside, and she tell me, it's not done like that, Louise. And I said, well, how is it done? She said, it's just not done like that, you know. And I said, well, you gonna tell me how it's done? She said, it's not done like that in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I kept working at it till I don't know if I got it perfect, but I didn't do that anymore. I always did something else, you know. And my sponsor would go on vacation, and I would go to the dances, and I would try my best to meet everybody there, make sure everybody else went home. I didn't go home alone, you know. But you see, that wasn't the thing. And when she'd get back, she'd have to help me get through this stuff, you know. I'd sleeping on 2 and 3 pillows trying to sleep at night when I know what I had said and done. But you see, my sponsor would go to central office. She made 12-step calls. We've been knowing to climb in windows. We've been knowing to do a lot of things on 12-step call. And I know once I went on one, and I took another lady with me. They called the SWAT team, and they had to break the door down for me. I didn't open it fast enough. And said, what you doing here? I said, I'm here for Alcoholics Anonymous. I couldn't hardly get it out. He didn't even know who that was. But still, he didn't find the gun. The girl was talking about, she called out there and said, she'll kill everybody in there. But it happened to have been all right. And now today, she's still sober. She and her husband with her family. But I don't know what I did. Some people say when I make 12-step calls, I read the whole book. I don't know if I read the whole book. I don't know nothing else to say but to read the book. That's what my sponsor said. The message is in the book. And she said, just don't go around trying to get personality sobriety. So because when they die, you ain't got none. So I get it out. You get it out the book. The message is in the book. And that's where I get my daily living, out of the book of Alcoholics Anonymous and 12 and 12 and all the rest of the books that come with Alcoholics Anonymous. And so in 1981, before 81, my daughter started having a lot of children. She has three. And I really got busy. I started calling central office and not only going on 12-step call, I put my name on the speakers list that I wanted to share, not so much because I had so much to say. I just wanted to be doing something in the midst of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I got to go out and share my experience, strength, and hope in a lot of areas around Los Angeles and a lot of places. And I enjoyed every bit. I met a lot of people, and that keeps me going by knowing a lot of people. A friend of mine named Miriam said that if you were alive while drinking, you're going to be alive when you get sober. So I think I'm a kind of alive while sober, you know. I go places. They don't send for me. I just go on my own because I want to be a part of. And not too long ago, say 4 years, 5 years ago, things got a little dull. I wasn't getting any 12-step calls. And I said, something got to happen here. So I went down to central office and got on the answering the telephone. But before I got there, I used to answer it years ago. And I walked in there, and I told Harvey what I wanted to do. And Harvey says, you got to take the training. I said, but I used to do this a long time ago. He said, yeah, but you got to go like everybody else. So it don't, just because you know it all, that don't mean they ready for you. So I had to go like everybody else, start all over again. And so I took the training, and I worked, and when the space came available down there and they needed a position, they asked me to come on board down there. Until last year, it would have been my fifth year this year, but I've been off on rehabilitation leave in a year. I had a case of sickness, was called CHF, which is congested heart failure. And I wasn't ready to slow down. And still I'm not ready. And I still want to get around and go a lot of places and do things. And I'm just grateful that Tim called me and asked me to come out here and share my experience, strength, and hope. Because, see, I love meetings. I love people. I love getting around. But I have to slow down. There's the light. I did it. I got to the meeting. And I'm truly grateful to be here. And I want to thank you for my sobriety. And I want to thank you for keeping this meeting. Thanks, Clancy, for holding things down for us all. And all the group and everything. I'm just truly grateful for the structure of this meeting. I want to thank my friend Clarice for riding out with me. I don't drive the freeway, so she had to come block by block with me. I know she was looking out the window. I know she was looking out the window when I go cross the line sometime, you know. But I'm still here, and I'm grateful. I think I better sit down now. I'm beginning to want to go over and over, and I know that my sponsor always told me, you don't say no souls after the closing time, and it's closing time. So I know it's time for me to sit down. And I want to thank you for allowing me to share my experience, strength, and hope. This program works if you work it. And those hardback books are not to be in the library. They're to go down to central office and get them and read them. Study them. Because your life is in there. It's not in the flyers. It's not in the dances. And it's not in the picnics. And a whole lot of other things we do when we get here. It's in the big book. And the feeling that I have arrived and found since I've been here these years, and see, I'm not no baby. I made the 3 scores and 10 and then some. And so I'm just grateful that I can stand before you and thank you for my life of sobriety. Thank you for allowing me to be a part of your life. And that's what I say every morning when I get up. I go to the front door and I say, thank you, Father, for your sunshine in my eyes to see it. Thank you for my feet, my hands, my mouth, the whole of me, for allowing me to carry this message of Alcoholics Anonymous to those that need it, those don't know they need it, but just allow me to be out in the midst of the human race. I found a sense of inner peace that I've never had in my life. Because I was always planning something. If you got in my car, the radio was going. My sponsor would say, are you afraid to be alone to hear yourself think? Suppose the high power had something to say to you. He had to come through all that junk you playing. So I learned how to read. I learned how to be at home. I learned how to sit at home and just do nothing. Just enjoy breathing in and out. Because life is short, and you can make it shorter. And I am just truly grateful that I have experienced the sobriety time, the travel time, and most of all, the fellowship time in Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you.